mics at the back of the hall here. So I can invite anybody who wishes to do so to ask a question to Professor Lynch, just to thank the Minister for attending the conference. He has to leave us. We have a roving mic here, so just please raise your hand. And if you are going to ask a question or make a comment, please just say who you are and identify your background, and then address the comment to Kathleen or to whomsoever in the audience. We have a question over here on the left. Trish, thanks very much.
Thanks very much for that very interesting and challenging lecture. I have one question, though, and I think it was kind of your conclusion. Can we, as teacher educators and working with student teachers, can we teach people to care? Or can you teach people to be socially just, you know, when you talk about the dominance of ideologies and the actuarial self and the emphasis on competition and income and our economic positionality in this world, when those views are so dominant, where's the potential to teach social justice?
Well, I suppose what I'm saying, I probably thought I'd spoken too long and didn't finish maybe quite what I was saying to say, is I think you have to, it's so obvious in many ways, and schools do it very well anyhow. I do think often it's about the practice of doing it rather than the practice of talking about it. And I think that, and you can in fact care for children, a lot of schools do it extremely well. I mean, I've always been astounded at the extent to which schools often with very limited resources do it. But the point I was making there at the end, actually, what I probably should have made is, I'm not saying that this is entirely a cognitive process. That, I think, is a major mistake. That is just about only, you know, some kind of abstract cognition. I think it is about learning to feel and learning to put oneself in the place of the other. And to learn to do that, you obviously need to see it practiced. But I also think you need collective reflection, not individual reflection. And you need to create safe spaces. And I'm not a curriculum expert. I, you know, don't teach in second level schools or primary schools. But I do think I've seen it through my own teaching over the years. Once you teach and create spaces for people to talk and can have dialogue with one another about these issues, it gives people the confidence to frame the world differently. It gives people the space to talk about the fact that they find school an uncaring place. But it's also, people have heard me speak years ago, always would say that I have done this all my, God blesses, over 35 years in teaching in the university. Simple things like surveys of children, how they feel about school. They're so elementary. You know, I don't see why we don't do them. Because if you want to know how somebody else asks, you have to let them tell you how they feel. And often the best way to do that is maybe with small children. It's more challenging, very small children who can't read yet or maybe write. But there are ways in which we can know whether or not children are and do feel safe and welcome and cared for in schools. As students, I believe the same thing in the university. And I don't think it's a mystery. I think democracy is a very missing value often. In, you know, schools are like universities. They're hierarchical. We mark people. Think of the power you have to grade somebody. The power to grade somebody is an incredible power. And it's a power that we very rarely reflect on. But I do think in terms of even talking about that power, talking at peers with one another about it, but also talking within education institutions about how do we care for one another, how do we create that culture, you know, what's missing. I think it is through dialogue that we do it. I don't think it's about just having a theory of care, if that's what you're asking. Absolutely not. No.
Thanks for that, Kathleen. Any other questions, comments, or observations? Back of the hall.
Notwithstanding the inequalities that you've outlined in opportunities in preparing for the Leaving Cert, say, is there merit in saying that it is fair to the extent that it cannot be interfered with by powerful individuals, and how might you change it?
So I didn't hear the last part of it.
Just repeat the question, please.
The last part of it, sorry. I'm quite bad hearing in one of my ears, so you need...
The last part is it fair to the extent that it cannot be interfered with by powerful individuals, And the more general question is, how might you change it?
Well, I think the only thing is, the first question is, I think it's fair. I actually do think that public examinations here, for the many problems there are with any public examination system, are fair insofar as within their own rules. If you mean, is the state examination system fair? I think it has been very fair, actually. In a cruel kind of blunt way, it is very fair. But I mean, they're all kind of, I wasn't asked to talk about curriculum change, but I mean, if you were, I think there's, I think if we're going to spend so much of our time, what do you spend, 14 years at least on average in school, then I do think there's a whole question of what capabilities in the human sense we actually enable students to have and how we evaluate them. If you take most of our subjects, for example, let's say you're very visually and spatially talented, you have one subject in art and design in this Leaving Cert examination system. One. There's no other subject that actually gives you the chance to display those capabilities. So there's no, if you are somebody who is very interested in physical education, somebody who is, you know, bodily kinesthetic capabilities are very advanced, you don't even have physical education, isn't it constitutionally, as the PE teachers pointed out several years ago, is not defined as one of the constitutional requirements, even of primary education. So there's nothing for you. So you, yes, of course, you can do sport privately, etc. But music or dance, music, there's one subject. I have huge equality issues with music. I have spoken at before and on this at length, I think it was at the U2 Fund, the Music Generation. I mean, half the marks that you get in the Leaving Cert for music are for performance. And you pay for that privately. So there's a massive private industry. Most music teachers work in the private sector, in, I mean, who pay and teach children at home, and that's how children do well in the music examinations. It's completely class biased. Absolutely. So, yes, I think any project, I'd say, any project, history, yes, you do the module at home. You do the module at home. Of course, if you have a more advantaged family, you're going to be more advantaged. So if you're going to have school-based assessment, it needs to be school-based, not home-based. That's what I would say. It needs to be school-based. If it isn't school-based, you are handing another privilege to those who are already privileged. So I would say extend the capabilities that we appraise and maybe allow for the diversity of talents of human capabilities that are there. And also, perhaps, if we are going to have school-based assessment in new ways and however it's done, I think it would be a good thing to give other opportunities to young people, but I think it would have to be in school. Otherwise, those who have excess resources will use them to their own advantage.
Thanks for that, Kathleen. Anybody else with a question or comment? Last call. Sorry, this lady here. Thank you very much.
Hi, my name is Joanne. I have more of a comment as such rather than a question, Kathleen, but it might lead to more questions. I visited a school yesterday, excuse me, in North County Dublin. They had their first cohort complete the Leaving Cert, June just gone. 70% new national student body, fantastic school. Majority of students bypassing their closest school to come to this school. I'm wondering, could you pass any comment in terms of social justice as a societal issue beyond post-primary education, beyond teacher education? Because I feel when I visited Dublin yesterday, the news was alive with a standoff of traveller families. And I think this is actually a huge societal issue. I think until such time that our society begins to talk about social justice and what it is, we're actually running against the tide in our schools and with our student teachers and teacher education, because there doesn't seem, there seems to be an anti-intellectual bias around discussing social justice in Ireland. You know, we've had the issue with Syria this year, so alive. The traveller issue over the last weekend or so. Like, if you're looking at media commentary on that at the moment, this is a massive national issue, both south and north. And how do we begin to have those kind of conversations?
Well, I agree with you. I mean, but unfortunately, you know, I think we have also got what you might call a huge demographic deficit in terms of how democracy works and simple majoritarian politics. Because when it does, what we have is an election coming up, so the whole debate is about getting elected. And I mean all parties. I'm not referring to any. So travellers are a minority. Lone parents are a minority. You know, refugee children, new communities are minorities. And I think that says a lot about our democracy, that in fact, those who are not politically powerful, who cannot exercise a power through the ballot box in getting particular parties into power, are largely ignored. I think that that says a lot about the charity ideology. We actually only care about them to give them what's left over, because they are not politically important in party political terms. They don't hold the balance of power. And that's a very cynical view, but unfortunately, if you look at successive governments, and I'm not just thinking of the current one, that is exactly what they do. And that is, I think, that people, maybe to ask them to stand up to it, but, you know, most people don't reflect like you're reflecting on this. They just think of, and that's go back to what I said about the neoliberal mindset, it is a fearful mindset. It is a mindset where people are made to fear that there will be no protection for them, no protection for their children, so they must only look after themselves. So I think there is a need to have a debate about those ideologies and how we have, but I also think that we need to be more, maybe more vociferous and maybe more. Teachers are a very powerful group of people in society. They are a very powerful group of people. They have an educational voice. They are all highly educated people. And maybe there is these forums like this, but also not just the ESAI, which is a research forum, but maybe something in between the teacher unions and the research associations, where people were, and there were many times over the last 30 or 40 years, groups of teachers who did mobilize and organize around social justice issues. So I think they are a very powerful group, actually, in terms of bringing that to the political table.
Thanks for that, Kathleen. Anybody else want to contribute to the discussion? If not, sorry, just at the back here, Connor. He was on our way with the microphone.
Connor Galvin, University College Dublin. It's an observation and a thank you. I'd like to thank you for challenging us so thoroughly. It's been a very, very provocative start to a conference. We picked this theme a while back. I don't think we could have got a better kicking of the ball into play in many ways. But I'd like just one kind of further observation, please, if I could, Professor, from you. Do the universities, and we're all associated with universities and colleges in the main, in the room here. Do the universities let us down at the moment in relation to this new agenda, public management and so on, or are they, you know, helping to kind of stem the tide in any way? I'm just wondering what's your thoughts on that. Universities generally now on the island of Ireland.
Well, I think that we have become part of the problem to some extent. I think I blame myself and other people. I think what happens in reality is most people are so tied up. We've had significant cutbacks, so I'm not underestimating the impact of that. But I think that the whole careerism, I'm writing in a paper on the ideology of the career, because I really think what has happened is people have become so fixated on their publications, their promotions, their careers. And I'm not talking about people who have insecure employment, because I do think that's a different issue. I'm talking about the people who have secure employment. That they've forgotten the politics and the importance of the politics of their own field. They've forgotten that it's very important to engage. I remember the time there were all these racist and sexist comments. I can't remember what he used to write, the Irishman's Diary. Maybe I don't want to, just as well, I can't remember his name. And I remember people were saying, oh, we shouldn't respond. We should let him be and let. But, like, if you don't respond and if you don't take it up in the public domain, well, then it just continues. So I'm saying here that about getting engaged in communication and global networks of communication, I do think that young people need to be our partners. If we're older, we're not, you know, media savvy. Like, I've learned huge lessons this last 12 months working with three very young people who are really from Bulgaria, one of my postdocs, an absolute expert on the use of media. And I think that we don't realise we want to get ideas out there. We have to start maybe linking education institutions with media institutions, especially in terms of social justice, and maybe thinking how we can do that by maybe incorporating young people into the design of how we do it. Because sometimes I think we're not actually that well able to do it, because we don't practice it often enough, whereas they practice it all the time.
Thanks for that. Thanks for that, Kathleen. Thanks, Conor, for the question. Anybody else want to contribute an observation, a comment, or a question? If not, can I ask you all to give one final round of applause to Kathleen for an excellent start to the conference. And before we close this part of the proceedings, just in terms of a few logistical notes, the annual launch event of Scotland kicks off at 7 o'clock, just over half an hour's time. There'll be two publications to be launched, and this launch will take place in the Level 6 foyer, which you can access from the lifts in the hotel reception. Notwithstanding what it says in the lifts, you do not need a key card to access Level 6, so you just simply press the button to get to Level 6. And the two documents, or the two publications to be launched will be the annual Scotland report for 2014, and Professor John Coulihan will launch that for us. And the second publication will be a research report, Creative Classrooms, Imaginative and Innovative Teaching in Ireland, and Professor Harry McMahon will kindly launch that for us. Both those launches kicking off at 7 p.m. in the Level 6 foyer. Tomorrow morning, then, there'll be a workshop here in the main hall for anybody interested in applying for seed funding from Scotland. That's at 9 o'clock, and that'll be hosted by Dr. Geraldine McGuinness, Professor Kathy Hall, and Dr. Conor Galvin as well. And then after the launch is at 7 o'clock, the dinner will be at 7:45 p.m. in the City View Suite. So you have half an hour to gather your thoughts, your reflections, or refresh, or whatever you want to do, and we look forward to seeing you at 7 o'clock in the Level 6 foyer. Thank you very much.